The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Watson, a member of this congregation. As most of you know, our minister, Reverend Dave Dunn, has just begun his sabbatical. Our guest minister today is Reverend Jeff Jones, who served as Human's consulting minister 1988-99. Many of us know and are glad he's back. He has also served as a call minister in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and at Emerson UU in Marietta, where he is Minister Emeritus. In 2017, he changed from parish ministry to community ministry, where, among other things, he served immigrants at the El Paso border for a year in 21-22. In April of 2023, he and his wife, Carol Buffum, moved to Smyrna, Georgia, where he does vegan outreach, is a transit advocate, and considers compassionate communication his spiritual practice. So on behalf of Reverend Jeff, our Director of Religious Exploration, Lexi Brown, Music Director Alex Peach, my fellow worship associates, and the dedicated technical team that is making today's live stream possible, I'd like to welcome you to Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North, which we lovingly call Human. We are a liberal faith community with a mission to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, whom you love, or where you are on your spiritual journey, you are welcome here. What warms a soul on a chilly day? A hearty bowl of chili or soup with a side of cornbread. All are invited to join us for Human's annual chili cook-off, which will take place at noon today in Fellowship Hall after the second hour class is in. Everyone gets to taste and vote on their favorites. Prizes that can only be described as fabulous will be awarded for each category: chili, vegetarian chili, soup, and cornbread. This month's 50-50 recipient is Planned Parenthood Southeast. I'd like to welcome Nala Lewis, the Georgia organizer of Planned Parenthood Southeast, to give us a brief overview of their work.
Good morning, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. It's always really nice to be welcomed by a faith-based community, especially dealing with reproductive rights. My name is Nala Lewis, and I am a public policy organizer at Planned Parenthood Southeast, and my pronouns are she, her, and Aya. I was going to tell you about our mission statement, but we have 5 minutes, so I'm going to go fast and just tell you about our programs that we have going on outside of the clinics. So my job is, and let me say this, we have three different organizers on our team, on the public policy team, and we all have different programs. My program is Black organizing and organizing in LGBTQIA, organizing. And my goal is to uplift and support the political and social power of Black communities through advocacy, organizing, education, and resource distribution, and making sure that I'm building an equitable and sustainable inclusive movement that centers those who are more impacted. So that looks like focusing on areas of Black maternal health, sexual assault awareness, Black HIV testing awareness, sex education, menstrual equity, and patient outcomes. And events that we have are our shop chats, which are discussions where we talk about sexual reproductive health care in Black communities and lack thereof and how it impacts the community. And then we do different events like Healthy Neighborhood Canvassing, where we go throughout different neighborhoods and talk about abortion rights or things going on at our clinics. And then we also have storytelling events where we just have people come and tell their personal stories about abortion and destigmatize abortion because it's healthcare. So we should just talk about it as such. And also, the next program I'm going to talk about is the Community Advisory Board. And if anybody is interested, please let me know. We're still looking for new members. So PPSE is committed to improving health equity in East Atlanta Village, Cobb, and Gwinnett. And those are where our three health centers are located. And we wanted to make sure every person, family, and community had the power and resources to take charge of their own health and well-being. So that looks like a time commitment of, I believe, once a month for 12 months. You get paid for each meeting, and you are required to put on 1 to 2 events per year. They are virtual meetings, and we are looking for members in Cobb and Gwinnett. East Atlanta Village is full right now. And then our next program is going to be our PPGen program, which means Planned Parenthood Generation Action. And that is a network of young activists across the country who organize events on their campuses and in their communities to mobilize advocates for reproductive freedom, raise public awareness about reproductive health and rights, educate young people about sexual health, and create lasting change in their communities. So it's really cool because we grew from 3 to 10 over the last year, and we have locations at Agnes Scott College, Clark Atlanta University, Emory University, Georgia State University, Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State, Morehouse College, Oxford College, Spelman College, and the University of Georgia. And then our last program is going to be the Legislative Action Council. As you guys may know, we're in legislative session here in Georgia. Local matters, local elections are so important. So we wanted to bring together supporters who are interested in learning more about what's going on in Georgia State Legislature during legislative session, particularly involving reproductive health care and things that are intersectional, like LGBTQI rights. Events go as community lobbying days, where we'll take members to learn how to effectively communicate with their legislators about the importance of creating policies that support reproductive health, sexual health, education, and other important issues. And we have some days coming up for lobbying. Thursday, February 15th is our Repro Day, where we're going to be in collaboration with different reproductive justice organizations such as Sister Love, Spark, Faith in Public Life, and Sister Song. And then Tuesday, February 27th, we have Pride Day at the Capitol, and it's going to be in collaboration with the Human Rights Campaign, SNAPCO, ACLU of Georgia, Southern Poverty Law Center, and more. And Thursday, March 14th is Sexual Education Day. If anybody is interested in joining our Legislation Action Council, please let me know as well. Just because we've already had some meetings, it doesn't mean that we can't catch you up and you guys can come lobby with us. So thank you for your time. So happy to be here. And looking forward to the chili.
Well, thanks. thank you for the warm welcome I've received from many of you. Some of you I've known for many years, so it's good to be back. It's good to see you. I want to thank so many people who have helped plan our service this morning. Certainly Paula and David and Amanda, our tech team, and Alex. I love your music choices, so it's good to be here. It's good to be here. We gather in worship to find meaning and to live more deeply. Worship creates connections within, among, and beyond us, calling us to our better selves, calling us to live with wisdom and compassion. It is in this spirit that we gather this morning. And now let us light our chalice together. The chalice we light this morning is a symbol of our faith. It binds us together as one people, a reminder that our strength is in our shared hope for the world, and that our common work is the creation of the beloved community among ourselves and the world. Bring this reading by Jay Wolin. Are we a people of holding on or letting go? Holding on to rigid ideas or letting go and opening our minds and our hearts to something new? Holding on to certainty about how things should be or letting go and living with the uncertainty of new ways of being in the world? Holding on to what makes us comfortable, or letting go so we may grow, which can be uncomfortable? Holding on to what makes us safe, or letting go to make room to help others feel safe? Let us ponder these questions in our heart. Thank you. Almost 26 years ago, this congregation chose to take a chance on a new graduate from Emory University's Candler School of Theology. I was not yet ordained, but I had the pleasure of serving this congregation part-time while you search for a full-time minister. Let me pause and give a shout out to Diantha Horton, whom I hope is joining us online this morning. Good morning, Diantha. You know there is a special place in my heart for you. It's a special time. To my great delight, in October 1998, the Eumann's Children's Choir sang at my ordination at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Atlanta. The Children's Choir was directed by Linda Ritter with Dave Schroeder, a company on guitar. Now, I don't know if you have a copy or if you have a video of the Children's Choir from 1998, but I gave, when I arrived this morning, to Paula a copy of my 1998 ordination, and you can skip right to scene 23 and see the Children's Choir of 1998. Did anybody have children there? All right, a couple here. All right, that should be a fond memory. I have had what I believe to be an extraordinary 25 years of professional ministry, and I want to share one important part of that with you this morning. When Carol and I, with our son Michael, moved to Fredericksburg, Virginia in 2000, so I could begin my first settled ministry, we began a yearly ritual each December of returning to my father's home here in Atlanta to be with family and friends between Christmas and New Year's. Part of the ritual of that yearly pilgrimage was that after the initial hellos, my father would disappear to the back of his house and return with an odd collection of newspaper articles, stories, and other items that had come to his attention since our last visit. These would invariably be a source of lively conversation over the holidays. In December of 2000, it was our first visit back to Atlanta. My father proceeded to tell Carol and me about an idea that intrigued him. He had read that an individual needs no more than 100 personal possessions to live, and to live happily and abundantly. And so the holiday banter began. My father and I agreed that in this list of 100 items, one did not have to count such things as light bulbs or bars of soap, or any of the household items that are regularly restocked. But what things would be included in a list of only 100 personal possessions? Like my father, I was intrigued with this idea of living simply. And before I left his house in early January of that year, I had made my own list. Curiously, when I made my list, that thing of the things that I needed and really wanted, my list came to only 94 items. And so without further thought, I put the idea aside. And yet the thought of only having 100, think about it, of having only 100 personal possessions, it stayed with me for that year and a half, By the summer of 2002, I decided this was something I wanted to try. As I soon learned, giving intellectual assent to an idea is one thing. Putting it into practice is another matter altogether. My plan was to take 10 months, and each month I would focus on a different room in our house in Fredericksburg. I would take an inventory of what was there, and I would get rid of what I didn't want or need. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Jeff, you had way too much time on your hands. Let me tell you that I did not get down to 100 items, not even close, and yet it was an insightful 10-month experience. Within a couple of months, I found some difficult choices. Carol and I had a box of keepsakes for our son, Michael. You know, refrigerator art or a favorite toy that he had outgrown. And there was the box of Christmas tree ornaments that our family had collected from the places we had traveled to over the years. None of these items were going away. And yet, despite these challenges in my 10-month project, I had many successes. I started in the living room. There I discovered that we had accumulated dozens of knickknacks, most of which had little or no meaning to me at all, or to my family. And yet a few months later, I discovered, packed away in the attic, my mother's bronzed baby shoe. And so the clutter of the knickknacks in the living room went away and was replaced by my mother's shoe, this shoe, which now has a prominent place of its own in our living room, not with the clutter of all the other knickknacks. This one story so aptly captures one of my favorite simplicity quotes by painter Hans Hofmann. He wrote, "The ability to simplify means to eliminate the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak." The living room closet was where I kept all of my coats and hats. And in the first month, I went from 5 coats to 3 and 9 hats to 2, a pretty good start, I thought. The second month, I moved to the kitchen, which clearly presented the greatest challenge. While I clean up after every meal, I don't cook, and the kitchen is clearly not my domain. Could I reduce the number of items we owned in the kitchen and still stay married? We did get rid of 1 of our 3 sets of dishes, but we still had 16 or more of everything. I remember as a part of that holiday banter with my father, we had agreed that a person needs only 1 plate, 1 bowl, 1 cup, 1 knife, 1 fork, and 1 spoon as part of their 100 things. So here was my solution. For the remaining 9 months of my project, I washed all the dishes by hand after every meal, making sure that over those 9 months, I only used 1 plate, 1 cup, 1 bowl, 1 fork, 1 spoon, and 1 knife. And that's what I used in the count toward my 100 possessions. All my clothes were kept in the bedroom, and unlike the dishes that I used, I had no interest in washing my clothes at the end of every day. And even if I did, I doubt that my family or the Fredericksburg congregation would tolerate me wearing the same thing every day. But I was able to get rid of any clothes that did not fit or that had not been worn in a year. Then I began to donate many of my clothes to Goodwill. My goal was to have 1 week's worth of clothes. I went from 27 t-shirts to 8, 15 sweaters to 5, 15 pairs of white socks to 8, and the same for dark socks. Now, when I told this part of the story to the Fredericksburg congregation, they asked me some deeply theological questions. One member asked, "Jeff, does a pair of socks count as 2 possessions or 1? And then the very next person said, "But Jeff, does a pair of underwear count as 2 possessions or 1? I can see some of you are still thinking about this. Another question to ponder. Today in 2024, I still live very comfortably utilizing 3 drawers in our dresser, in my bedroom dresser, and 30 inches of closet space. And I still have my winter clothes, my summer clothes, and my pickleball playing clothes. In my home office, I eliminated 40 linear inches of paper, and of the 636 books that I own, I donated 1/2 of them to the public library. With a little cajoling, our family went from 3 TVs down to 1, and I kept only 4 videos, a video of our wedding, my ordination, and a couple of others. Now, admittedly, I started this project with a number of advantages. I'm not talented with my hands, so I don't make things. I'm not a handy person, so I don't have a lot of tools. I'm not a music guru, so I don't have a music collection. In fact, I'm not a collector at all, except for 1 thing. I had been carrying around my extensive coin collection since I was 15 years old, and yet I had not collected coins for 30 years. And so I sold a large part of my collection, keeping just a few coins, because coin collecting is something that my father and I did together when I was young. This 10-month project with voluntary simplicity, though, was only the beginning of other significant changes in my life. In December of 2004, my family moved to downtown Fredericksburg into a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 864-square-foot house. It was during this move that we chose not to get TV or cable service, a practice that we continue to this day. No streaming services. Talk about a blessing. In our move to downtown Fredericksburg, I could also walk to almost everywhere, to the bank, to the grocery store, to the library, to the UU Fellowship on Caroline Street. This, too, was a blessing. I subsequently reduced my books from the original 636 to about 150, keeping only those books not found in the public library. My exploration with voluntary simplicity has been a critical part of my personal and spiritual growth in Unitarian Universalism. As I have come to believe as a Unitarian Universalist, my life is not about the destination, it's about the journey. My goal of having no more than 100 personal possessions was a helpful, probably unrealistic benchmark or destination. The process, though, the practice of examining my choices, the idea of living deliberately, of making each day meaningful, is an integral part of life's journey. I am learning that there are many ways to live deliberately. In the 21st century, we seem to be obsessed with electronics and social media. And there is a busyness in our lives that leaves little room for the spiritual. In the words of Henry David Thoreau, why do we live in such a hurry and waste of life? And so I have made choices to be less busy and less plugged in electronically. To this end, I've never owned a cell phone and I've never been on social media. But here is where it gets even more compelling for me. While I was intrigued with the idea of living simply and removing the material clutter from my life, I soon recognized that there was a lot of other clutter in my life. Specifically, it is the emotional clutter that we all tend to accumulate. After entering full-time ministry, I always devoted at least one Sunday service in the fall to the Jewish High Holy Days. And in that Sunday service, I almost always spoke on some aspect of forgiveness, which is a key part of the High Holy Days. With my newfound interest in removing emotional clutter from my life, forgiveness and what I eventually came to call radical forgiveness became a way of examining old hurts and new ones as well. What do I mean by radical? I use the word when I really want to push an idea to its limits and to see what it has to teach me. Radical simplicity, radical forgiveness, and also radical love to love one's enemies as Jesus taught in the Gospel of Matthew. And our Unitarian Universalist principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no exceptions. These are all radical ideas. I've just got to tell you, there was a new member at Emerson who gave a talk a few months ago, and he was new, and he read this inherent worth and dignity of every person, and he looked for the asterisk. He knew that somewhere there must be some exceptions to this, but I ask you to imagine living the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no exceptions, and that includes politicians. Are you still with me? Simplicity, forgiveness, love, inherent worth and dignity of everyone. Any of these and other ideas can be practiced in radical ways. For example, suppose there was no need to forgive because we believe that each person, even when acting in harmful ways or speaking harshly to us, suppose we believe that they are doing the best they can in the moment. There's no need for forgiveness if you believe that. And instead of loving one's enemies, what if Jesus had said, have no enemies? These ideas would be radical indeed. Within a few years, I learned of other ways of being and communicating that would help me say and hear things differently. And like the ideas of radical forgiveness and radical love just mentioned, this has the potential of stopping emotional clutter before it takes root. When I moved to Marietta in 2010 to serve the Emerson Unitarian Universalist congregation, I began to study nonviolent or compassionate communication developed by Marshall Rosenberg. What I have found in compassionate communication is a way of thinking and being and a set of skills, skills that can be used in a daily, even moment-by-moment basis to help one stay connected to others, particularly during conflict. By studying compassionate communication, I began to realize just how much emotional clutter we live with. Let me see if any of this resonates with you. To my dismay, I discovered that I was an unsafe driver. I judged other drivers. This was in Atlanta, mind you. This was 2010. I judged other drivers harshly. I would sometimes curse them with finger gestures included. And I even altered my driving to teach them a lesson. As a driver, I was not the person I wanted to be. Or when the telemarketer called my home, or when I was talking to someone from customer service, it's like I became a different person and not a very nice one. And most heartbreaking of all, I recognized that I could say unkind things to those I care most deeply about, particularly in moments of stress. I soon learned that when I disagree with someone, when I feel hurt, when responding to injustice or to a politician who does not share or represent my values, I can allow my frustration and anger. Somebody asked about anger earlier. I can allow my frustration and anger to overtake me. Or with practice, and I mean a lot of practice, I can find a different way of responding to that hurt and to that politician and to that issue, ways that are life-affirming in every instance rather than life-alienating, as Marshall Rosenberg would say. Particularly regarding justice issues, I am fond of saying, I don't get angry, I get energized. Over time, I became convinced that at least for me, the most important idea is how we speak and act and even think about others. No exceptions. And that is why I changed from parish ministry to community ministry in 2017 to engage with compassionate living and compassionate communication more fully and to do so as a student, as an aspiring practitioner, as a facilitator, and an activist. Living compassionately and striving to do so more consistently is a tall order. No one is perfect in this ideal. I certainly am not. And yet I can think of no more worthwhile endeavor, something to keep aspiring to and working toward, even when I stumble many times every day. In my journey with voluntary simplicity, then, living with fewer things, embracing a moderately paced lifestyle, and seeking life-affirming relationships, particularly times in disagreement and stress. These, then, are a few of my favorite things.
Please join me as we extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again.
I close with these words by William Henry Channing. To live content with small means, to seek elegance rather than luxury, and refinement rather than fashion, to be worthy, not respectable, and wealthy, not rich, to study hard, think quietly, talk gently, act frankly. To listen to stars and birds, to babes and sages with open heart. To bear all cheerfully, do all bravely, await occasions, hurry never. To let the spiritual, unbidden and unconscious, grow up through the common. This is to be my symphony. Go in peace.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.